This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3099 for Thursday, the 18th of June 2020. Today's show is entitled Linux in Laws Season 1 Episode 8 The Review of the Review and is part of the series Linux in Laws. It is hosted by Monochromec and is about 46 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is: in this short episode, our two heroes rant about Linus, Transmeter, EdgeOS.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. This is Linux in Laws, Season 1, Episode 8. The review of the review of the review of the review of the review.
The news. Yes.
Okay, the news is mainly about our friend Linus.
What's he up to?
Well, he bought a new laptop or something.
Did he?
He did a release, and he's been moaning about line lengths, etc. Those are the main three news items on his part, I think.
Well, have I missed one? Do enlighten us, dear Martin. What's the crack?
Okay, if we start with the last one, he's basically saying that if you have some old crappy machinery, terminal wise, etc., then you're stuffed because we, as people with fancy new machines, don't care, and we're gonna take away the 80 characters per line limit.
But this is blasphemy.
Well, yes, I mean, the whole kind of premise of Linux is that it runs on many small and tiny and old devices, right? I mean, obviously they don't have to upgrade to 5.7, but yeah.
Well, maybe we can get the affirmative action crowd in, because this is clearly an age bias.
There's been some backlash about it, but yeah. This is when...
Mostly from older people, I suppose. Not the young hipsters like Linus Torvalds, if you're listening.
Don't know. How old is he?
40. Good question, actually. Let me look this up. He must be in his 40s now.
But, yeah, so... I mean... Who cares, right?
He is... As a matter of fact, no. He's 50.
Okay. There we go. It's good age. Good age.
Linus, if you're listening,
yes,
you, Linus, you don't know the amount of damage you're doing with that sort of remark.
Yeah,
there's a German saying: you should never saw off the branch that you're sitting on, And that's exactly what you're doing now, Linus, if you're listening.
I'm sure he's listening, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is more of interest to the people who actually read code anyway, right? So people that just run Linux, they don't really care, but there we go.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking loud here about the embedded folks. The embedded folks still use serial lines to get in touch with motherboards to check out the exact steps that a bootloader and the first steps of the kernel are taking once you power up a machine or a board. Mm-hmm. And typically, these terminals would run 80 by 24 characters. Because these terminals are as old as we are.
Yeah, so what are they changing the limit to, Chris?
I don't think that they are sticking to any limits.
Okay.
Meaning that's probably all kind of messed up eventually. I don't know.
Yeah, there's some mention about 100 in some comments, but I don't investigate all the details, but still. Mm. Yeah, it's a little bit short-sighted, let's put it that way.
And the other bit was actually that Linus is defecting from Intel, I hear. You see, you know about his background, right? The transmitter business and all the rest of it.
Why don't you enlighten our listeners?
When Linus basically moved to the US, there was a reason for this. He got an offer from a company called Transmitter. Now, which folded subsequently, I think, or was bought by another entity. And at that stage, I think shortly afterwards, Linus basically moved to the foundation as Linux Foundation. But the Transmitter was set up with the idea of doing a fancy RISC architecture, but providing full compatibility to something called the Intel CISC architecture. Pretty much repeating, I think, the idea. That Intel already, I think, at that stage already had, which is still availing of the advances in RISC technology, and then wrapping this RISC core up into a CISC execution layer. So when you buy a Skylake or Coffee Lake or whatever these things mm-hmm. are called these days, or
Tea Lake.
Gin Lake, Rum Lake, whatever fancy names Intel can come up with, essentially you're buying a very performant, let's put it this way, RISC core wrapped around in a CISC wrapper, if you will. Because on a die level, you're still talking RISC here. Again, something that Intel stole from a company called IBM, who came up with the concept about 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. When, I mean, if you power up a mainframe, one of the first steps during the IPL, the initial program load, is actually it reads some microcode. Cool. That goes back to the point in time.
Yes. I have to say.
That goes back to the point in time when you basically were able to upload microcode from paper tapes or even punch cards, and then powering up a machine. So if you buy a Linux One system that still runs opcode that has been defined about 450 or 60 years back, give or take, yeah, I suppose. But at the very core, of course, is still a very expensive and fast RISC processor, because underneath the hood, IBM is using something called the PowerPC architecture, PPC.
Okay.
On mainframes.
Yeah, but yeah, he's built this all himself. Well, he's put some components together.
So yeah, that was I think the stint at Transmitter was what? Not that long. He visited, at least according to the Wikipedia page. You find this hopefully in the show notes. He visited this in 67 and 96. 67 exactly, and worked there from 97 to 2003. That means 6 years. Interesting. And I think the deal was, yes, he was being deployed by Transmitter, but he would still have the time to oversee the Linux development, as in the current development from a Linux perspective.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the main point of this move from Intel to AMD is to get more performance, really, wasn't it? There isn't any underlying motivation, I believe.
And AMD is faster than Intel. Interesting.
Apparently, to some independent benchmarks.
Independent benchmarks, basically. I thought these were the people you pay for your lies. No?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Indeed. Okay. And the third news was 5.7 release.
Do enlighten us, Martin. What is 5.7?
Oh, Linux 5.7. It's the one after 5.6.
I see. Any interesting stuff happening on the kernel front then?
Well, personally, wasn't particularly struck by anything that stood out for me. A bunch of extra drivers, some new FAT file system driver from Samsung. But then, yeah, that was a bunch of bug fixes. That was it, really, as far as I could read. Ubuntu is going to be a bit behind with releasing this into theirs, but obviously they will do this. And did anything strike you out of the release?
To be honest with you, I didn't even pay attention beyond the stuff you mentioned. Can't recall, no.
In fact, there are sort of 14,000 commits to that release.
Which is average, right? I mean, it's not a huge number.
Mm. No, but if you compare that to your other open source projects, that's obviously by far the most active project, right?
Well, I would reckon it's one of the biggest open source, distributed open source community projects, for want of a better word, on the planet. As a matter of fact, I cannot think of anything bigger right now.
Well,
maybe apart from browser stuff like Chromium or even Firefox.
Maybe.
I mean, in terms of overall KLog, as in killer lines of code.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah.
No, I mean, browsers tend to be fairly comprehensive these days.
Yes.
Clocking in at a couple of million lines of code, I would reckon. Similarly, on a similar scale, the kernel weighs in, give or take. I haven't done a line count recently, but that would be my assumption.
But 2 million.
That we would be looking at least at 5 to 10 million lines of code on Flutter. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, if you compare that to you're out by a factor of 5.
So how big is it?
10.8 million lines. Yeah.
27.8. Okay. Wow.
I mean, it's when you think about the likes of an Oracle database, which has 20 million lines of code as well. I think 20 or 2, anyway, many millions. And then if you look, like, say, a Redis project, that's 70,000. Those are the big ones out there, right? So I'd be surprised if Linux was smaller than an Oracle database piece of code. But...
Well, I reckon you don't have that many external committers to something called Oracle, right?
No, but it has been around longer than Linux.
Well, that's true. For some reason or another.
By the way, there are a number of reasons for that, but let's not go into that right now.
By the way, welcome to the closed source review podcast. In case you're wondering, yes, we are discussing closed source software for a change.
You have to have some perspective, right, for these things.
Absolutely. In that case, how come you know how many lines of code are in Oracle?
Well, it's an interesting fact if you compare, an open source piece of code like Redis with an Oracle or Postgres.
Right? The very nature of Oracle is that it's not open source. So, if somebody tells you Oracle has about, 20 million lines of code, you simply have to take their word for it because they cannot prove it. No, yes, maybe? You see my point?
Good point. Yes.
So if Oracle is lying, tough luck.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a way, it doesn't really matter.
Maybe it's only a few thousand lines of code.
The main point is obviously being bulky and stuff.
Maybe it's just a few thousand lines of code and the rest is marketing fluff. You never know.
Yeah, so it makes you wonder, though, why does an operating system need that many lines of code, right?
If you take a look at the... Well, at least when I did it...
And more to the point, how many groceries are in it?
Oh, no, here we go again. Dear listeners, there has been an ongoing discussion between the hosts of Linux in Laws about the viability of GoDos in certain code bases or not. And the point that I try to make here is that in isolated use cases, yes, you can use GoTo. Martin, apparently coming from a Lisp or a Clojure background, totally disagrees. So if you have thoughts on this, the email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. Please share your views. We are more than happy to discuss them on the show.
If you're listening, Claudio, yeah, we appreciate your feedback on this.
Yeah, more on the review of Claudio's review later.
Indeed.
Okay. Going back to the kernel. The last time I looked at it, the bulk of the code, as in from a KLog perspective, was actually bus drivers. That is the reason why Linux is so big, because you can run it on a single chip system, as like an SoC, a system on a chip rather, right up to the mainframe. All these gadgets have different devices. For example, the mainframe still has an architecture called channel processor attached to it. Special instructions set and all the rest of it. You have a million GPUs out there, as in graphical processing units that want drivers. You have a bulk load of Wi-Fi Wi-Fi chips. Never mind the DSP and the embedded world. All of them need actually device drivers. The ARM folks have done the decent thing. They invented something called DST. Which is, I think, device system tree or something. Essentially, it's a definition language inside the kernel for device drivers, like DMA mappings, port mappings, and other characteristics. The idea is basically not to rewrite device drivers every time you need a new device driver, but rather putting an architecture into place that can be modified with very little effort. That was the overall idea behind something called the device system tree or whatever it's called or whatever it stands for. So actually there is there's even a compiler inside the kernel that takes the DST description and then generates the appropriate instructions or mappings on the fly. And needless to say, that helps a lot with porting the Linux kernel to devices with that sort of architecture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so DSD doesn't stand for dark side tech.
Does it?
Fair enough. As in the server of the DSTS.
I see.
More on that later.
Yes. Okay.
Very good.
Is there anything else worth discussing at this moment with the regards news. To maybe even beyond 5.7?
Sorry, what were we talking about? What are you talking about now?
News. Just general news.
Oh, news.
Yes. I noticed that the code of the Corona app is actually on GitHub. So as you may or may not know, the German government decided to task some C-League players by the name of SAP and German Telecom with the development of a Corona app that is able to detect Corona outlets within your
what's a Corona outlet?
An outlet basically where you can buy the beer.
Okay.
Europe, if you're listening, European, what's the word I'm looking for? Really? Not cartel, but rather competitive agencies. Really? Competition regulators. That's what I'm looking for. Yes, if you're listening, you may want to get in touch with the app producers to ensure that they also consider Heineken, Carlsberg, Rolsch, Guinness, and whatever else comes to mind here, because just doing it for Corona, which is, by the way, a Mexican beer, not even coming from Europe, may be a blatant violation of the competitive landscape here. Laws. Yes, and, exactly.
Yes, and whilst you are listening, brewers of the above, don't forget the sponsoring opportunity.
Indeed. And yes, we don't do apps, but we do a beautiful podcast called Linux in Laws.
Excellent.
Okay, coming back. No, jokes aside. The idea, of course, is because the German taxpayer is funding this, that you eventually put the code on GitHub, and that's exactly what happened.
Okay.
So for those,
is it any good?
I haven't checked it out, to be honest with you.
Okay.
The idea is to have a cross-platform app running on iOS as well as Android, that will implement George Orwell's wildest dreams, essentially, meaning that you have now full traceability, of course, anonymized, if you will, because that was one of the great marketing taglines of this app. With this Corona stuff. So the idea is basically you install the app on your phone. It then uses something called Bluetooth Low Energy, BLE, to pick up similar smartphones with similar apps with the app installed as well, and then tracks these contacts. Should one of the other smartphones then belong to an owner that registers as positive with regards to the overall infection situation, you are then being notified that within a certain amount of time, you were in contact with that person. The trouble is basically, it doesn't give you the phone number, it doesn't give you the name, so it just essentially tells you
that. Is there any kind of follow up there that you have to get yourself tested in Germany or not?
It's not required, no.
Right.
But the big worry here is that because smartphones are not anonymous. A smartphone has something called a SIM card in it, and each and every SIM card has a unique identifier,
IMSI.
which is not the phone number exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that information, of course, is accessible via the operating system, and also via the app.
Ah.
It requires, depending on your operating system, certain permissions.
You may as well not install it in the first place then, right?
Exactly. So with that sort of technology, as I said, George Orwell's wildest dreams have come true because, okay, Google tracks you if you're using Maps and don't turn the location service off. But here, you are not just being tracked with regards to your whereabouts, you're also being tracked with whom you were in contact.
Mm-hmm. That's quite handy for lots of reasons.
Indeed. Especially if you are a government entity not concerned with the public health, but rather some much more shady business.
And obviously, the shady people are not going to use this app. It's kind of pointless.
Shady people, if you're listening out there, do not install this app. Just don't. Never mind Corona, Heineken, Grolsch, Carlsberg. Just forget about the app. You don't want to do this. By the way, I wouldn't advise using smartphones here. Feature phones with a throwaway SIM are much more useful in this context because after use, you simply throw away the SIM. No big deal. So I heard anyway.
And the phone, yeah.
Yep.
But okay. Presumably in your country, you can also not buy phones without ID or.
Well, I think there's, in theory, there's the legal requirement to register, even if you're using a prepaid service. But I reckon for those people who are listening, who are slightly more on the know, I'm sure you also know how to get around this requirement.
Shady bunch, yeah.
The shady people, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
So there's one thing remaining. We're going to do the POX. And before this, we have a review of Claudio's review. Just to fill in the listeners, somebody called Claudio. What's the second name again? So Claudio Miranda, if you're listening, this is for you. Come sta?
Bene, e tu?
Bene, have you heard about Claudio? He read about Next Step on some podcast.
He did a what?
Spilled the beans about Next Step, including its spelling.
Porca troia, you serious?
It is out in the open on some podcast called Hacker Public Radio or something.
So the whole world knows that Next Step is not really all lowercase?
You name it.
This is big and it's immediate attention. Let me get in touch with the HQs.
Somewhere in the more shady parts of Manhattan's Hell Kitchen, there's a small nondescript building hosting the Fraternella di Correzione, or the Brotherhood of Correction. The Brotherhood is the SWAT team, local chapters of the 'Ndrangheta, the Cosa Nostra, American mobs, or the Armenians called to rescue to do the heavy lifting. Think of it like the Delta Force, the Navy SEALs, ISIS, and other organizations with a special focus all rolled into one, but much more professional. On a good day, on a bad day, you really don't want to upset them, as a long and painful death would be considered the easy way out.
Cicely got in touch. Apparently, there's a spot of bother.
What's the trouble?
Apparently, somebody revealed the truth about Next Step's original spelling.
Like all lowercase?
No, the original spelling.
Like the one in the book written by the one who must not be named?
Exactly, in public.
You mean even on Wikipedia and such? Let me check. It's true indeed. That's a clusterfuck. Whoever did this must have travelled back in time and changed this in all the wrong places. This is bad news. And it is written in the tomes of old that the name with the original capitalization, when uttered aloud, will unleash the beast and end all worlds.
Afraid so.
This is way beyond our pay grade. This calls for special attention by the chaps.
You mean the First Order?
No, rather the cleaning crew behind them.
Somewhere on the planet on the outer ring of the Southern Crab Nebula, there are the headquarters of the Eriskrat. A race originally bred by the First Order, the Eriskrats are a species of transgalactic, interdimensional mercenaries with a prime objective, setting things right, for whoever has the most convincing arguments. Most of the time, this means galactic credits. A lot of galactic credits. Think of them as Mandalorians with an attitude. For the benefit of those few listeners not familiar with Eriskratian, we provided a version of the following dialogue between Mluon Thrat and Nanak, two of the best consultants the Eriskrat have to offer, and normally only booked for special assignments.
A system soul just got in touch looking for a quote for a contract for something important. Something about an operating system called Next Step.
The one, when spoken out aloud with the wrong capitalization, can destroy worlds and galaxies and cause minor havoc?
That seems to be the one. The contract is for a single, though.
Single system, single star, or single planet?
No, single being.
What? They didn't get the memo?
Like all other big organizations, the Eriskrats recently had to undergo a so-called reorganization, where a bean counter, most of the time more commonly known as a controller, in other civilizations, at headquarters came to the conclusion that the margin on destroying anything smaller than a planet wasn't cutting it, in the light of the prevailing expense structures like building and maintaining Death Stars, low-orbit ion colliders, etc. And even ending a planet carried a hefty surcharge according to their latest price list. You get the picture.
Apparently not. What should we do?
Tell them that we cannot make an exception. Either the whole system goes or nothing at all. We have to let this slip, as otherwise the word will get around that we are still the cheapos which we used to be.
Shortly afterwards, in one of the bigger cities on the eastern coast of a continent in the northern hemisphere, of a third planet from the star of a system called Sol.
The chaps got back in touch. Apparently they sent a new price list, which we never got. Interstellar mail still sucks.
Bummer. What's the deal?
They will only destroy a whole planet at a price. It gets cheaper if we want a whole star system gone.
Are you serious? This won't wash with the Don. We can't send someone local.
Connor comes to mind, but he just sent a personal time off request. His third great cousin's cat just got kittens, and he has to get a present for the christening.
You're joking.
No, the cat's a Jew, so he can't cut corners.
Fuck it then. Let the Sicilians sort it out themselves.
The Brotherhood just rang. The deal is off. They cannot send somebody to sort this out. Apparently, it's too expensive to get the pros in on this.
Are you serious? The world are gonna end and they're quibbling about dough.
So it seems.
What's Salvatore up these days? Can't he take care of this?
No, we haven't heard from him in ages. Apparently he's busy writing computer software or something.
And I can't wait.
Doesn't look like it, as some Amish websites really love the stuff.
You mean the speedy access to adult entertainment?
Yep, that's the one.
Oh.
This is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35, or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs.
So, Martin, what do you make of this review of the review?
I'm going to be politically correct here. And I think it was very constructive.
Fair enough. Claudio, before this goes totally the wrong way, don't get me wrong, just us taking the piss, this is totally normal. This is what we do as Linux in-laws. Your comments and your feedback is appreciated. And needless to say, that goes for any of the listeners. We do value feedback. Sometimes we may reserve the right to use some artistic freedom here, as we did just with the kind of slight sketch here that we just did about Claudia's review. But as I said, your reviews, your feedback is appreciated. So if we don't have any more feedback, yeah, thank you, Claudio. If you're coming from an Italian background, molto grazie, signore. If not, thank you very much anyway. And we look forward to more of this kind. We may reserve the right not to take the piss in this case, just in case. Okay. Before we roll this up, I think there's still the pox to do. So, Martin, what's your pox?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Pox. Oh, my God. I don't know. I have a lot of anti-pox, but...
We'll come to that in a minute.
Hmm.
Okay, if Martin draws a blank here, my pox is actually a TV series called Californication. I checked this out again recently. I think it dates back about 10 years.
I do have one. Carry on, yeah.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Carry on.
Yes. Californication basically describes the exploits of, and now Martin, you have to help me out here. I'm pretty bad at actor names. X-Files. David Duchovny or something like this?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. It describes the exploits of him exactly, being a writer for a TV show, among other things, and then heavily into kind of family life, drugs, alcohol, needless to say. The whole thing reminded me very much of Factotum or even Barfly or Hollywood, done by a guy called Charles Bukowski. The whole TV series has a somewhat Bukowskian touch to it, I think. So if you check it, you will find the links in the show. You will find the link in the show notes. Get it from your video outlet or streaming service of choice. It's at least a couple of years. I think they did about six seasons or something like this, worth watching.
Okay.
And of course you have our beloved Pamela Adlon starring this too. So any Pamela Adlon fans, this is something
you
don't want to miss.
By any chance?
No, I wouldn't call myself a Pamela Adlon fan. No. Okay. She's just a great actress, that's all. But on to your picks. Pox of the week, rather. Martin.
Yes. Yeah, so it ties in with the anti-pox, but yeah, just remind me. It is a website called wiki.archlinux.org, which friend and colleague.
Who recommended that to you? Just check in there.
Somebody
you know?
Tech support guy. It's a bit dodgy, but I thought I'd check it out.
Anyway. Ah, okay. Maybe some random Arch package maintainer recommended that to you.
How is that called? Arch Wiki. Yeah, okay.
Fair enough.
Kind of makes sense. But yeah, no, it's quite well written and very informative, all in one place. Should you...
Very good. If you're so kind of technically inclined like Martin is.
Find out the basics of Linux pieces of architecture like IP tables. Which brings me on to the pox of the week, which is...
That was the pox of the week. You mean the anti-pox?
Anti-pox, yes. Well,
a pox stands, of course, for a pick of the weeks or a picks of the week.
It should be a pow, surely not.
Well, don't worry about it. No, it's just shorter.
Pow.
And of course, that unfortunately, I did send a memo about this, but apparently you didn't get this. This term was coined while you were out of office. As in, not participating in the podcast for that single episode. And the anti-pox, of course, is something you want to forget very quickly or just have a general despise for. Despise, is that the word I'm looking for? That you generally despise, exactly. So let me give you an example. Strawberry ice cream would be a pox, whereas... beer would be a pox too. Okay. Whereas beer gone off would be an anti-pox, or some already melted strawberry ice cream in the gutter would be an anti-pox. That sort of thing.
I see. And what floor do you live on?
You get the drift. Third, yes. I think. I can't recall. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. No, let me guess. Your anti-pox of the week is something called HOS.
Yes, it's kind of related to that. I mean, it's a little bit strong. It's not that bad, but yeah, it is. As with anything, proprietary put some messy wrappers around it and confuse everybody. So, yeah, that was my antibox. And EdgeOS being a router switch OS not invented, running on Ubiquiti Network Kit.
For those people who bought similar Ubiquiti kit like Martin did, and want to get into kind of doing providing ISP services for their neighbors on the side, that sort of thing, or are just kind of concerned that their 20-port router doesn't fit the bill anymore, yes, Ubiquiti does very serious kit. In case you cover such as you're not like Martin, you're not impressed. There is actually, and you will find the link in the show notes. There is the ability to install Debian packages for Ubiquiti, so you can complement the EdgeOS user land with native Debian packages. Because this is something that probably not that many people know. MIPS, and this is basically what the Ubiquiti devices use, is a supported architecture for Debian, similar to ARM or Intel. So you can install native MIPS-based packages on your EdgeOS device. That, of course, gives you the advantage of not having to deal exclusively with this crappy user land as offered by EdgeOS, if I am not completely mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice Bruce is here? So I don't think
No. Okay.
Yes, just
in that case, cut. Okay, cut. In that case, cut. Yes. And let's get on with the next episode.
We would like to thank the Ediscrut for sponsoring this episode of Linux in Laws. Whether it's just a single small star system you want to get rid of or a whole galaxy, no job is too small or large for this elite troop of trained professionals who will get the work done for you in no time. Offer limited to the next 40,000 years. Bulk discounts offered for jobs including 10 or more galaxies. Surcharges for single planets may apply. Please note that the Ediscrut is a highly sophisticated group of seasoned professionals. Don't try this at home, kids of any age. This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for their song Salute Margaret, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
Ciao ragazzo, come sta?
Bene, e tu?
Bene, have you heard about Claudio? He ratted about that next step on podcast.
He did the what?
Spilled the beans about next step, including its spelling.
Spelling is a bit tricky to do in Italian. Okay. how do you pronounce
Porca Troia?
Troia is Troia.
Just roll the R, that's important.
Porca Troia. You serious?
It is out in the open on some podcast called Hacker Public. Called Hacker Public. Let me get a beer first. On some podcast called Hacker Public Radio or something.
So the whole world knows that next step is not really a lowercase.
You name it.
This is big and needs immediate attention. Let me get in touch with the HQs.
That's, okay, if we can take bad. It to Dutch, that's okay.
It's all right. Italian is easy once you get in it.
Do you have some vino Rosso at your disposal?
No, I just I'm on the tea still. It's too early.
Too bad. Should we try the New Yorker mob too?
Okay, hang on. I need to.
Should we record the Italian first? It's really up to you.
It's probably a good idea. Yeah, stick with the Italian.
But as I said, please take it down a notch because I think that was slightly over the top.
No. It's magnifico.
No, seriously, Martin.
What? It's just a bit of fun, isn't
it? Start the recording now. Okay, rolling. Okay, I keep rolling. I mean, we can always edit this out later, so no worries.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, no,
should we do a dry run for the New Yorker bunch?
Yeah, Russian. Say something Russian.
Nastrovye. It's pretty much like Italian.
Nastrovye. Da, da.
Only darker if you get my drift.
Spastiba.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I mean it can be American. I mean, don't worry about it. So that's okay.
Okay.
Sicily got in touch. Apparently there's a spot of bother.
Oh, is it trouble? That's more.
Maybe a little bit more realistic. Sicily. Shit. Sicily got in touch.
Carry on with the Italian.
No panic. It's not Italian, Chris. Okay. Okay. Sicily got in touch. Apparently there's a spot of bother. Okay. Rolling.
No, rather the cleaning crew behind them.
Oh, fucking hell.
What? Who? What? What have you done? You stopped the recording.
Cut.
What happened?
That was just an artistic amendment to the dialogue.
What are you on about? Oh, you added something. Okay.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.